I bit my lip, trying not to swallow against the blade which had already broken my skin. Dominic didn't seem sick, but then he hadn't succumbed immediately the last time he had left the castle grounds either. It had taken more than a day, despite his significant wounds. How long would it take the sickness to overwhelm him this time, when he had started off healthy and strong? I tore my mind away from the thought, needing to focus on my immediate situation if I was going to escape alive. I breathed slowly, in and out, while I thought. After everything I had been through, both Dominic and Lily were a mere wall away. I refused to lose them both now. "We can't stay here forever," I whispered as quietly as I could. "You know that." Cole tightened his grip, but kept the knife still. I breathed a little easier. He must recognize the truth of my words. "If you let me go, you might have a chance of escaping on your own." I could feel his head shaking behind me. "Do you take me for a fool?" he breathed into my ear. "I saw how many guards that cursed prince brought with him. I just don't understand where they came from." I stayed silent, equally mystified. "I will not walk away with nothing now, after all this work, all this planning."
"You would be walking away with your life."
"Silence!"
He shook me slightly, and I felt a small biting pain, and then a drop of blood running down my neck. I shut my mouth. I had pushed hard enough. Now that I had planted the seed, I needed to provide a spur.
"Cole knows we can't stay here forever," I projected to Lily. "If you all come back over here and have a conversation that suggests there might be a free path for him to get us both out of here, I think he might take it. Only you'll have to be extremely careful to keep everyone out of sight when we emerge. He's going to be jumpy, and I'd rather not die just because he was startled."
Lily moaned. "I do not like this situation."
"Just get all the guards out and hide yourself somewhere. I'll have a better chance of getting away if we're on the move than if we stay stuck in this cupboard."
Reluctantly, she agreed, and I soon heard the group return.
"Look, we're wasting time," said John, sounding frustrated. "He could be anywhere by now. I'm dividing the guards into search parties and sending one to each floor. We'll flush them out."
"Don't send all of them," said Lily. "We can't leave the throne room undefended."
"Why not?" John sounded impatient and dismissive. "What's he going to do, sneak back in and steal the throne? They're clearly long gone from here. It's about the one place in the palace we know they're not."
Dominic growled, a dark, threatening sound.
"See," said John. "Dominic agrees with me."
"Don't be ridiculous. He could be saying anything."
I could feel Cole's tenseness behind me and knew he was listening to every word. I wanted to applaud their little charade.
"Dominic, leave off all that growling for half a minute and nod your head if you agree with me," said John. There was a brief pause, and then, "See? I told you."
"Men, ugh. Fine, send out your search parties. I just want to find my sister."
Their voices faded away again, and then we heard barked orders and the sound of many moving feet. A number of boots tramped through the antechamber, and both Cole and I held our breaths until the door closed and silence fell. It stretched on and on, and I began to wonder if he would need another prompt. But finally he stirred, prodding me forward.
"We're leaving," he whispered. "Just don't forget. One sound, and I slit your throat."
I groped in the darkness for the door handle and managed to open it slightly. We walked out slowly, Cole holding my back pressed hard against his chest, his knife unwavering. As expected, the antechamber was empty, both doors shut. He paused, which I hadn't expected, and spun me around.
"Don't try to run," he warned. "You won't get far."
The gold cord was still tangled around one of my wrists, everything having happened too fast for me to bother removing it. He pulled it loose and commanded me to hold both hands in front of me. Placing his knife in his teeth, he quickly bound my wrists, before spinning me away from him again. He placed a hand on my shoulder, and I felt the tip of the knife press into my back, between two ribs.
"Don't worry, princess," he whispered. "I know what I'm doing with this thing. Your death will be no less inevitable. It will just be considerably slower."
I swallowed, but relayed the news to Lily in my mind. Hopefully this would make my rescue easier. "We're in here, out of sight," she told me. "We're ready." Except when Cole pushed me roughly forward, he didn't turn toward the door into the apparently empty throne room. Instead, he propelled me to the door out into the corridor, and checked it quickly before thrusting me through into the passageway.
"Lily, we're not going into the throne room. He's gone the other way."
My breathing hitched as I started to panic. This hadn't been the plan. What would happen if we stumbled on some of the guards? I kept imagining I felt the pressure of the knife increasing. Cole pushed me down the corridor and into another. I didn't recognize the route and had no idea where we were heading. We saw one group of guards far in the distance, and Cole pulled me back, pressing me against the wall until they disappeared in the opposite direction. He became a little more confident after that, pushing me forward at a faster pace. I had been keeping Lily informed of our progress, but she seemed almost as panicked as me, scrambling now to get into place for another plan. Finally, we reached a small door that looked like it might lead outside. Cole directed me to open it, and I did so awkwardly, due to my bound hands. I pushed the door, and it flung open faster than I had expected. A flash of brown and red filled my vision, and then something jerked me forward and flung me to the ground. I fell, only just managing to twist my bound hands into a position to take the brunt of my landing. A familiar roar sounded as I rolled onto my back in time to see Dominic lift Cole completely off his feet. He shook him, roaring again. But Cole still held the knife, and rays from the dying sun reflected off the blade as he lifted it over his head.
"Dominic!"
I screamed, struggling to push myself up. His eyes flashed up and saw the danger, and he flung Cole away from him with all his strength. He landed against a wall hard and fell to the ground. He lay there, still, his body bent at an unnatural angle. I slumped back against the ground and closed my eyes. I expected to feel hands helping me to my feet, but instead I heard a loud thump. My eyes flew open, and I saw Dominic crumpled in the dirt a short distance away from me. Chapter 31
"Dominic!"
I screamed again, twisting over and crawling slowly toward him. I added a mental scream immediately afterwards.
"Lily, where are you?"
"What? What's happened? We're still trying to follow you, but I think I must have gotten one of the turns wrong. Dominic took off a while ago."
"He's here. I think Cole's dead. But something's wrong with Dominic."
"I thought he was starting to look weak." She sounded grim. "Where are you?"
I looked around.
"I don't know. In the palace grounds somewhere? Just outside a door in the east wing, maybe."
"All right, we're coming."
I had reached Dominic and now knelt beside him. I had been sure he had acted before Cole's knife struck, and I could see no sign of an injury. His collapse must be the result of his curse. Leaning over him, tears streamed down my cheeks as I searched for a heartbeat, or breathing, or something. He stirred.
"Oh," I gasped, "Dominic."
He gave me the smallest of smiles.
"Are you hurt?"
he asked, his voice weak. I shook my head.
"How did you know where to find me?"
"I grew up in this palace. I know it well. Once I realized the direction you were going, his destination was obvious."
"You saved me."
He smiled again.
"I told you I would."
I gave a shaky laugh that cut off abruptly as his eyes fluttered closed.
"No, Dominic, no!"
I gripped his jacket as best I could and shook him. He didn't respond, although I could still hear his labored breaths. I dropped my forehead down onto his chest.
"I will not lose you now. Your kingdom needs you." "I need you,"
He seemed too weak to speak, but I refused to let him go. If he could not speak, allowing me to hear him as I did the servants, then I needed to connect directly with his mind. I needed to communicate with him as I did with Lily. I had no idea if such a thing were even possible, but I was determined to succeed. I closed my eyes and concentrated my mind. I could feel how much my powers of mental communication had grown in the last months, honed and strengthened by my time at the castle. I shaped my thoughts as I would do to send them to Lily, but instead of sending them out to her, I focused all my attention on Dominic. I breathed in the smell of him and felt his warmth beneath my hands and head. I thought of how he made me feel, infuriated and exhilarated, cherished and so alive. I reached into my dress and pulled out the rose he had given me. Somehow it had survived being stored in two different dresses now. It hadn't even wilted. The last piece of our enchanted life at the castle. The deep colour and the pure white of the spirals in the rose garden combined into a single blossom. I pressed it against his chest and sent my thoughts flying in his direction. I felt my mind connect with the essence of him, so like to what I had always done with Lily, and yet so unlike at the same time. Her mind felt safe and familiar, at times like an extension of my own. His felt wild and barely tamed, full of pain and grief. "Dominic," I projected, "I will not let you die." Dimly I heard the arrival of Lily and John, and part of my mind knew they had pulled up my hands and were cutting the cord from my wrists. But I ignored them, too focused on my new connection with Dominic. One of his hands twitched, and for a moment I thought his eyes would open, but he did not seem to have the strength.
How are you here, in my mind?" he asked.
"This is the connection I have with Lily, have always had with her. This is how I learned to hear you and the servants at the castle. I'm sorry I didn't tell you sooner. I was cut off from her at the castle, and it made me angry and afraid."
"No, Sophie, you have no need to apologize to me. We have both of us had our secrets."
He paused.
"I know that you could never forgive me for mine, could never love me. But I want you to know that you have taught me so much. You have shown me what it is to love. And even if there was never hope for me to be freed from my curse, you have freed my kingdom, and that is enough."
The tears continued to pour down my cheeks as I stared at his still face. "Saved your kingdom? What do you mean?" Somehow our connection seemed to give him a small burst of strength. He opened his eyes, the bright blue that had always captivated me, capturing me once again. He smiled.
"Didn't you notice the snow melting? Or the wolves disappearing? Or all those guards I had with me?"
I gasped. "The people have returned."
"They have returned, thanks to you."
"But I don't understand. I was never able to figure out how to save them."
"I already told you. You taught me to love. The people of Palinar were moved to a place of protection until their ruler could learn the true meaning of love."
He paused, as he drew a particularly labored breath.
"I did not understand self-sacrifice, or how to value myself last. And then you came. I should never have forced you to come as I did. And yet, how could I regret it?"
I felt his emotions wash over me, a wave of love so strong I could barely breathe. For a moment, I choked on my tears. "So I was right. It was a protection, not a curse, on the people." He grimaced.
"It was only the royal family who were cursed. Twice cursed, in my case. But now you have freed my people from my curse. No one could have freed me However, I see that now.
No, I projected, my hands clasping at his jacket. I cannot accept that. There must be a way to free you.
You must find my sister. She has been missing for more than 3 years now, but I cannot believe she is dead. Find her and help her claim the throne. She has a good heart, like yours. She will make an excellent queen.
I shook him. And what of your heart?
It is yours. And you shall have to keep it safe for me when I am gone.
I don't want you to leave, I sobbed. He went so still that I feared he had died, but then he breathed again and me along with him.
You would not feel that way if you could see what I have done. And you should see it. It is only right.
I felt his mind wrap itself around mine in a way I had never experienced before. And then in my mind's eye I could see a series of memories, as vividly as if they were my own. I saw King Nicholas, exactly as his portrait had shown him, strike down villager after villager. I whimpered at the sight. So Dominic had been there. I wanted to cover my eyes, but the images were in my mind, and I could not turn them off. Thankfully, Dominic had looked away after a few moments, but his feelings from the time continued to assail me. Shock at his father's actions, anger that he would attack unarmed people in such a way, and underneath it, fear at where his father's rage might be directed next. And over all of it, confusion. It didn't seem just, what his father was doing. But wasn't it a ruler's right to do with his people what he willed? They all of them lived to serve him, did they not? I could feel his revulsion, his urge to intervene, and his shame that he did not. And then Dominic spoke over the top of the memory.
I was there, Sophie. I stood by and let him kill all those people. Even the babies. I said nothing. I did nothing.
I remained silent, too overwhelmed to speak.
It gets worse, he projected. I wish I did not have to show you, but it is the only way for you to understand.
The memories shifted, and I saw the palace as it had been more than 3 years ago, shining and full of people. The servants scattered before the king as he strode through the corridors, and I knew, as 17-year-old Dominic had known, that news of the king's massacre had preceded them to the palace. By the time they approached the royal wing, not a single servant was anywhere to be seen or heard. King Nicholas made no comment, his face cold and detached, until Queen Ruby appeared at the top of the stairs. Dominic's shame returned at the sight of his mother's ashen face, and the way she met his eyes only to quickly look away. His mother would have at least tried to intervene. He knew it. She did not believe the people lived to serve them. A spasm passed over the king's expression. I could not have guessed at its meaning, but the young Dominic interpreted it as a sign of the king's emotions for his wife, of his love. Except that over the top of that sensation, I could feel Dominic's current opinion. It had not been love. His father had not known how to love. He had valued his wife because she was beautiful and because at times the people's love for her had been useful. But he did not love her.
"What have you done?" asked the queen in Dominic's memory. "Tell me it isn't true. It cannot be true."
"They defied me. All of them. They got only what they deserved."
The king attempted to brush past his wife, but she clutched at his sleeve.
"Even the babies?" she whispered, horror in her eyes.
King Nicholas turned on her, anger transforming his features.
"How dare you question me?"
He raised his hand and hit her hard across the face. She fell backwards, losing her footing and tumbling down the long flight of marble stairs.
A young girl whose presence Dominic had not even noticed ran forward and grabbed blindly at her father's jacket, attempting to shake him, despite his solid bulk and her slender frame.
"How could you?"
she screamed. Her father, for it was Princess Adelaide, raised his hand as if to strike her too. But quick as a flash, Dominic interposed himself between them, catching his father's wrist. For a moment the two men stood facing one another, both of their chests heaving. And then all three of them looked down to the bottom of the stairs. The Queen lay completely still, and Dominic's certainty of her death washed over me. I gave a gasping sob, overwhelmed with the horror of his memories. But they did not stop. I felt the young Dominic's determination to push his father down after his mother, but before he could do so, a flash of light blinded him. When his sight slowly returned, a figure he had never seen before stood at the top of the stairs. All three royals stared at the woman I recognized as a godmother. And yet, despite similar features, including the grey hair, the woman looked nothing like the godmothers I had seen. Instead of a humorous affection, almost grandmotherly in nature, this being radiated wrath and power. Dominic and Adelaide drew back, the princess clinging to her brother, but their father stood his ground, a thunderous rage built in his face as he listened to her words. The godmother rebuked him for his actions and for the evil he had brought to his kingdom. Young Dominic's confusion made me wonder what royals were taught about the godmothers in these lands. Didn't he know that the rulers were responsible for the prosperity of their kingdoms? Why else would the godmothers go to such lengths to ensure true love ruled? King Nicholas had just demonstrated that no love remained in his heart. Dominic should not have been surprised to find a godmother intervening before he brought about the complete destruction of his kingdom. She explained the protection that had been placed on the people of Palinar, and the conditions for it to be lifted.
"How dare you seek to work against me?"
the king raged at her in the memory. And then he actually lunged forward to strike the godmother as he had just done to his wife. The godmother, sadness on her face, stepped back to avoid him. And it seemed in his anger the king had forgotten who he dealt with. The winged woman's steps took her from the top of the steps into the air, and the king's momentum caused him to lunge headfirst down the stairs. Within seconds, his broken body lay motionless next to the queen's. Dominic and Adelaide retreated another step, their eyes now on the hovering godmother. She looked at them both and sighed. "There was always hope," she said, "although I did not entertain much. And now the burden of freeing your people will fall on you, young prince. I hope you will prove a more worthy student of love than your father." And she was gone. But the younger Dominic knew only the pride his position had taught him, and the anger toward his father, which had been whipped now into a rage so burning hot that there was room for nothing else.
"I did not know what love meant, though my mother had tried to model it to me," Dominic whispered in my mind. "My exile at the castle calmed me somewhat. But it was only in watching you that I began to remember the lessons of my mother, so different from those of my father."
My heart ached for him. I could not imagine growing up without my father's love. It had been an anchor for Lily and me during the years that our mother had been distant from us. A succession of short memories flashed through my mind. An angry Dominic, eaten up by guilt and shame and grief, roamed the castle, rejecting his sister's attempts to speak with him. It wasn't until a week after their parents' death that he realized he hadn't even seen her in days. He searched the castle for her, but could find no sign of the 13-year-old. Fear gripped him, and he called on the godmother he had so recently seen for the first time. To his surprise and mine, she actually came. This time she looked more like the godmothers I had met, her no-nonsense air obscuring an underlying vein of sympathy. Princess Adelaide is gone from here. She is no longer your concern. He pressed her for more information, and she placed her hands on her hips, narrowing her eyes. You have a whole kingdom of people who are your responsibility, young prince. What thought have you given to them? I had hoped that you might take my words to heart, and yet so far you have shown too much selfishness even to consider your own sister.
What consideration or love can I show to my people when they have all of them disappeared to a place where I can neither see nor hear them?
He asked, angered by her rebuke. She sighed. You are not your father, and you have not yet committed his crimes, though you bear the responsibility for correcting them. I can give you some assistance, but it will come at a price.
A price?
I could feel the injured pride in his memory, that this unknown woman should dictate such terms to a prince of Palinar.
Why should I pay a price?
For a moment the wrath she had shown toward King Nicholas reflected from her eyes. Inside you are in danger of becoming more beast than man, young prince, as your father was before you. Perhaps if you see this reality always before your eyes, you will be spurred to consider your responsibilities toward those in your care. As for my offered assistance, you will now find yourself able to see your subjects. But the only ones you will be able to hear are your own personal servants.
But my servants all reside at my castle.
And that is where you also will be confined. So often you have retreated there. Now you must remain there until you are ready to step out and take up the mantle of kingship. If you step outside the grounds while your curse remains, you will be struck with a deadly illness. A terrible grinding pain ripped through the memory as Dominic's body transformed into the beast. He opened his mouth to protest, but only a growl emerged. You must transform your insides back into a man again, she had cautioned him. Because only when you have so completely transformed yourself that a woman will value you enough to marry you, despite your beastly state, will you be free. The memory died away, and I could once again only feel Dominic's current emotions. The strength of his mind seemed to be weakening, and I desperately tried to cling to our connection.
I heard you back at the castle,
he told me, and I frowned in confusion at the change of topic.
I had come to find you, to give you the rose and wish you farewell. But I heard what you said to the servants, how you could never love a man who stood by and became a part of his father's evil. I know you could never love me.
My eyes widened. Oh, but how to explain to him that I had been ready to forgive Cole until he proved himself just as evil as his father? I had only said that because I could not tell them the whole truth.
When I discovered that Cole had escaped, I knew instantly that something was wrong, and that I must pursue you, must protect you from him. It did not even enter my consideration that such a course of action would mean my death. I only hoped I could retain my strength long enough to save you.
His voice filled with wonder.
And then, as I travelled, I began to hear flashes of my people around me. By the time I reached the garrison of guards inside the gates, I could hear them clearly. A good thing, since I needed them to follow me straight into action. As I grew closer to you, as you helped me change, the protection had begun to weaken. But only when I was truly ready to sacrifice myself did it entirely lift.
He shook his head weakly.
I did not realize that self-sacrifice would be so easy. when I thought of you in Cole's hands, it was no decision at all.
You're right, I projected, staring into his eyes. It is too easy. His brow wrinkled, his eyes narrowing in surprise. Dying is far too easy. If you wish to prove your ability to love, you must go on living and show that you can sacrifice every day, in the small things as well as the big.
I would live if I could, he projected. Even though I would never see you again. Merely to be in the same world with you would be enough.
The tears flowed unheeded down my face as I knelt over him. It is evening, Dominic, and you have not yet asked me your nightly question. He reached up a hand to stroke the side of my face.
I do not deserve you.
I don't care what you deserve. I gripped his jacket with both hands and leaned closer. Ask me. The fading light in his eyes rekindled for the briefest moment.
Will you?
His chest stilled, and I stopped breathing until his own labored breaths began again.
Will you marry me in the morning, my love?
Yes, yes! I spoke the words aloud as well as in my mind, in case it made a difference. I will engage myself to you in truth this time, Dominic, and I will marry you in the morning or any day you like. Just don't die. Amazement transformed his face as he covered one of my hands with his own much larger one.
But why, Sophie? Why would you marry a beast like me?
I stared at him. There were so many ways I could answer that. So many reasons I had been wrong and he wasn't a monster. But every moment he grew weaker. I decided to give the simplest answer possible. Because I love you, Dominic. An exhalation, half cry, half groan, broke from him, and his whole body began to shake. I fell back from him. Light roiled across his hands and his features, making it impossible to see through to his face underneath. His loud roar sounded all around me, only to be suddenly cut off. The light faded, and his shaking stilled. Dominic looked up at me out of the face from the portrait, aged slightly, but easily recognizable. He pulled himself into a sitting position, gathered me into his lap, and lowered his face to mine, our lips so close that I couldn't be sure whether they actually touched or not. He paused there, and heat rushed through me as I remembered our previous almost kiss. His hand reached out to stroke my hair as we hung in that moment, consumed by memories and shaken by love. I had known then that I wanted his kiss, but not why. I knew now that I wanted not only his kiss, but his forever, too. We both moved at the same time, pressing our lips together as we clung to each other in joy. Chapter 32 I could hear Lily laughing and applauding in the background, and when we finally broke apart, I looked up at her sheepishly.
Don't give me that look, Sophie. You enjoyed every second of that.
I looked back at Dominic, and he could clearly read the truth of her words in my face, because he leaned in to do it again.
Whoa, 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 said Lily with another laugh. Just hold on there.
Dominic glowered up at her, but she was unmoved. I don't think we've been properly introduced. I'm Lily, and that's my twin you're holding so possessively. He gave a reluctant laugh, the sound almost as rough as it had been when he was the beast. He lifted me gently from his lap and stood, pulling me up with him.
I am Dominic, and I can assure you that I have no wish to start my new betrothal at odds with my bride's twin.
Oh, excellent. You can speak now.
Lily gave me a significant look.
Wasn't there something rather important and time-sensitive that needed to happen once you could speak?
I gasped.
The coronation vow! Quick, Dominic!
I ran back through the still-open doorway, tugging him along behind me. Lily and John trailed after us.
What's all this?
John kept pace with us despite his confusion. "Is there really such a rush?" Obviously, the coronation hadn't been one of the things Lily had been able to explain to him while they were under guard. I shrugged and didn't slow down. I don't know if anyone has been keeping track of the number of hours it's been since Dominic's father died, and I, for one, don't want to discover we've arrived too late because we dawdled on our way there.
"Very well, then," said Dominic,
and without warning swept me into his arms and took off at a jog. I giggled and swatted at him. "Put me down!"
"I thought you said we were in a rush."
I rolled my eyes, but secretly I liked the way he carried me, as easily as if I were made of cushions. He might have become human again, but some things hadn't changed. His shoulders were still broad, although correctly proportioned now, and his arms were still strong. After a whispered conversation between Lily and John that I didn't attempt to catch, John broke away from us. However, he had joined us in the throne room within minutes of our own arrival, with someone else in tow. Lily had already explained that they had stashed the terrified official in a dusty sitting room, and that John had gone to fetch him. "If he was official enough for a wedding ceremony," she said, "we're hoping he's official enough for a coronation oath, too." The man seemed extremely nervous to be confronted with Prince Dominic, but he made no protest to our request. I expected that performing the ceremony in such a fashion would feel rushed and irreverent, just the four of us gathered around the official. But Dominic stood tall, and his strong voice spoke the words of the ancient vow with such meaning that the moment achieved a solemnity I had not expected. And when he finished, cheers broke out all around us. I had been so transfixed I hadn't even noticed the hall behind us filling with the guards and other inhabitants of the city who had made their way up to the palace to find out who had broken the curse. For a long time after that, Dominic was busy talking with important citizens and the occasional noble who had remained in the capital. The guards, members of the single company he had ordered to remain in the capital when the others had been dispersed, were ordered to round up any of Cole's men who still remained free and return to their barracks. Several of the people who had arrived identified themselves as palace servants who had been living in the city while the palace stood unoccupied. I received the strong impression that no one in the city had stepped foot in the palace since the curse, that they had, in fact, feared the place. Since they had initially fled at the return of King Nicholas from his massacre, none of them could have known the curse's true nature. But if they had been afraid before, they now seemed happy to have returned. They quickly put themselves to work cleaning out the kitchen and several of the bedchambers. "You'll have to hold a proper coronation ceremony with the actual crown at some point," I said to Dominic. "But I suppose you'll have to wait for the nobles to gather first. How in the kingdoms have you been ruling them all this time if you couldn't hear anything they said?" His eyes looked sad as he answered me.
"My father's was a harsh rule. He had trained his subjects to immediate and unquestioning obedience. With the mirror at his disposal, the nobles dared not break his commands even on the privacy of their own estates. The godmother allowed me a week to make my way to my castle, and I used the time to issue my orders. I knew the kingdom needed to go into sustainment mode."
He frowned.
"Since I couldn't hear them, I had no choice but to find each noble and issue my orders without conversation or discussion. I must have looked terrifying to them, too. I can only suppose they thought I meant to rule as my father had done. They did not know of the protection they had been given, or that I would be confined to my castle. I have watched them through the mirror, understanding as much as I could from observation alone, and sent further orders as seemed necessary."
"Did you bring the mirror with you?" I wondered if it could be helpful now as we tried to bring the kingdom back together.
"No," he said. "I'm afraid I didn't squeeze it into a saddlebag when I leaped on Spitfire's back and charged off to rescue you."
Lily rolled her eyes. "Men, they never think of the practical things." Dominic stiffened, offended, until we both burst into peals of laughter, and he relaxed.
"I think having the two of you together is going to take some getting used to."
"Well, get used to it," said Lily, slipping her arm around my waist, because I intend to be around for a while. John slapped Dominic on the back.
Don't worry, you'll get used to it. Mostly. Just don't be surprised if she starts breaking off mid-sentence or staring into space for protracted periods in the middle of a conversation, because she's been distracted by a voice in her head.
Lily shook her head at him, but fixed her eyes on Dominic and me.
Speaking of the practical things,
she put her hands on her hips. I hope you weren't serious about that getting married in the morning thing, because I cannot possibly put together a royal wedding overnight. And just think of our family. Mother and Alyssa would be heartbroken if they missed your wedding.
I've already sent them word to come, so they could save you and attend my wedding, but it will take them weeks to arrive.
Ha! I grinned at my twin. You don't fool me, Lil. There's the real reason. You don't want me getting married before you.
Well, I am the older twin, she said with dignity, although her eyes laughed back at me.
And I've already been waiting patiently for several months, said John, slipping his arms around her waist from behind and pressing his face briefly into her hair. I glanced back at Dominic.
The curse doesn't require we be married in the morning, does it?
He pulled me close and leaned down to whisper in my ear, the sound of his familiar voice speaking aloud, the growl still lurking behind his words, thrilled me.
Would you believe me if I said it does? I don't like this talk of months.
I chuckled and shook my head. You've waited for years. You can wait a little longer. I looked over at Lily. I don't think Dominic could possibly leave Palinar right now. Do you think the people of Marin would stand for their heir being married here?
Lily's eyes lit up. A double wedding? As soon as Mother and the rest arrive.
She turned to John. Oh, John, can we?
He laughed. If it means finally setting a date, I will use all of my persuasive powers. We can have some sort of ceremonial event when we return to Marin to commemorate it.
He tried to suppress a smile.
I know you're a little sick of balls after the tourney, but...
Lily groaned. I said my birthday ball was the only one I would attend this year. She bit her lip, but I could see excitement in her eyes. But if it will convince your parents, I suppose I might be persuaded to dance.
Dance? Asked a familiar voice behind us. But you dance so beautifully, Princess Sophie.
Oh, no, said Lily as I swung around to confront the girl.
Oh, she exclaimed, looking wide-eyed between the two of us.
I'm sorry, I didn't realize. You must be Princess Lily. My apologies.
Tara!
The short girl looked close enough to my imaginings that I suspected I might have recognized her even without her voice. I rushed forward to embrace her, and she squeaked in surprise.
Sorry,
I stepped back. But I had no idea you were here in the capital, and I'm just so excited to be able to see you. I glanced reproachfully at Dominic. Why hadn't he told me he had brought my friends with him? But he was regarding Tara with a raised eyebrow and an expression of resignation.
Tell me, he said, how many of my servants have gone rogue and defected to the capital in my absence?
Tara flushed, looking a little scared.
Oh, no, Your Highness, only I couldn't sit around at the castle, not knowing what had happened to the princess.
Ignore him, I told her. That was extremely sweet of you, although probably foolhardy.
It could have been dangerous.
She shrugged.
That coal made it through, didn't he? And I didn't ride here alone or anything. Lottie Samuel has turned out to be far more resourceful than I would have imagined. He was on duty in the entrance hall and overheard His Highness talking about riding to the capital, because he had seen coal there in the mirror, and also your carriage heading in that direction. So Samuel convinced one of the coachmen to bring us here in one of the unused carriages.
She looked a little guilty.
We may have given poor Thomas the impression that you were expecting your maids to follow you.
You mean Lottie's here too?
Where?
I looked around, eager to see if my mental image of her had been equally accurate. My eyes fell on Lily, who appeared to be suppressing a laugh. I gave her a glare.
These are my friends.
She grinned back at me. I'm only laughing because she's so exactly like you described her. You have to let me come and meet Lottie, too. Tara had already started leading me away, and Lily ran to catch up without waiting for my response. Tara apologized profusely for mistaking her for me, but Lily waved away her apology and had soon entirely ingratiated herself with my maid. We found Lottie with a tall man, dressed as a footman, who hovered over her protectively. I immediately recognized the truth of the assessment Tara had made of him months ago. Samuel looked trustworthy and easily approachable, and I also realized that Tara had been right about Lottie. My image of her had been quite wrong, although her basic features and colouring were as I expected. I had allowed her general attitude and her lack of confidence in herself to override Tara's description, but it turned out she was indeed willowy and graceful. I couldn't be surprised at the way Samuel looked at her. All of the introductions were quickly made, and Lily was soon winning over Lottie as well. I watched her with amusement, somehow suspecting that I would now be expected to share their services. But in truth, I was merely glad to be so quickly reunited with my friends from the castle. With so many new people to meet, I appreciated the familiar voices. All three were full of thanks to me for breaking the curse, although I tried to deflect their praise onto Dominic, since he had really been the one to free them.
"But he couldn't have done it without you," said Tara. "He hadn't broken it in all the years before you came."
I considered telling her the details of the double curse, but hesitated. I didn't know if Dominic would want it widely known, and I wasn't sure I had the energy for such a complicated explanation anyway.
"Of course, we don't really know what the curse involved," said Lottie. "And we weren't supposed to talk about it. Except you can't stop rumours, not completely. We were all sure you must have come to break it, and at least half the servants were convinced that if you couldn't break it before the coronation window closed, we would all be stuck forever."
I shuddered to think of the truth to that guess. Now that I knew the truth of the curse, I knew that it would never have been broken with Cole as king. Would the wilderness have returned once Dominic had no longer been heir and regent? I shook myself from such gloomy thoughts to ask after the rest of the castle servants. Tara told me that Gordon had begged to come, claiming that his work helping Matthew with Chestnut qualified him to assist our coachman. When Gilda roundly refused his demand, he had even attempted to stow away in the carriage. Lily exclaimed that she wished he had succeeded, since she was dying to meet him, but I couldn't help feeling relieved he had failed. There would be enough going on over the next few days without my feeling responsible for whatever unintended mischief he would have been sure to land himself in. I told Lottie she should write to them all, though, and let them know that I would visit the castle as soon as possible to meet them properly at last. Chapter 33 There turned out to be a great deal to be done to return Palinar to order and prosperity again. I forced Dominic to go to his bed before he had even finished making a list of the tasks which needed to be completed immediately. The servants had somehow managed to dust four chambers for us, but Lily and I insisted on sharing a room. We weren't ready to be parted after our long separation. We both slept deeply, far beyond normal levels of exhaustion. But we awoke early, excited to finally be able to talk in person again.
"You know, I've been thinking," said Lily, "about the tawny."
I nodded.
"Me too. We knew that each tawny was shaped by the prince who called it, so we assumed Dominic must be evil and twisted. Only then we learned that the darkness of the curse had corrupted the tawny through him. Looking back, I can't understand why it never occurred to me that it was the darkness that made the tawny so awful, and not Dominic himself. I suppose it was because I thought he was responsible for bringing the darkness in the first place. It never occurred to me that he might be trapped as well."
Lily shook her head.
"How could you have foreseen any of this? We knew nothing about Palinar or Dominic."
She looked across at me. And don't bite my nose off, but I think he must have been responsible for at least some of the difficulty of the tourney events. Because think how perfectly it's worked out. You were exactly the right person to come here. In fact, you might be the only person who could have broken both curses. She bit her lip. We knew that some of the original magic of the tourney remained, enough to keep us all alive at least. But I think there must have been enough to ensure the right winner, too. The whole time we thought we were cheating, using our projections to give us an advantage. And yet, it's only because of that ability that you were able to communicate with Dominic. In the end, all those horrible events ensured the right bride won. I couldn't deny the truth of her words, or that there had been at least a little darkness lurking in Dominic when we first met. I guess I wasn't ready to believe that Dominic and I could be a perfect match until now. Lily spoke in my mind. And you're completely sure he is? You didn't agree to marry him out of pity or a sense of responsibility or something? I grimaced at the concerned look she gave me.
I understand why you're concerned. You haven't had the chance to get to know him like I have. But you saw the way he saved me, the way he sacrificed himself for me. I just wish you could see some of the other things he's done.
I broke off, my eyes going wide as an idea occurred to me.
What is it? When Dominic was too weak to speak, I managed to connect with him in my mind, like we do.
Wait, what? You can talk to him in your mind now, too?
My face fell. Not any more, sadly. The ability must have been somehow connected to the curse. But while we were connected, he did something we've never done. Something it never even occurred to me to try.
I explained the way he had shown me his memories. Lily's eyes lit up with excitement.
I guess we never even thought of it, because before now we never needed to do something like that. All our memories were shared. But let's try it right now. I want to see that magical castle of yours.
We ran late for breakfast because it took more experimentation than we hoped. But the important thing was that, in the end, it worked. Hurrying through the palace, we both tripped more than once, distracted by the inundation of shared memories. Neither of us spoke it, either aloud or through projections, but I knew we were thinking the same thing. This new connection would make our inevitable separation easier.
Because by falling in love with John and Dominic, we had ensured that our lives would be lived apart.
We only stopped practicing when John demanded our attention. "You have to be firm with them," he told Dominic, as if imparting a great pearl of wisdom, and Lily threw a piece of half-buttered toast at him.
"I have a question for you, Dominic," she said, after choosing another slice. "When you arrived, you never seemed in the least confused between Sophie and me, even though we were dressed nearly identically."
Dominic looked disdainful at the suggestion that he might not have recognized me.
"You may look something alike, but I could never mistake anyone for my Sophie."
I blushed and looked down at my toast. I still hadn't quite adjusted to my wonderful new reality. Jonathan raised an eyebrow and glanced between the three of us before leaning down to half whisper in Lily's ear.
"I could tell you apart from the beginning, too, remember?"
She glared at him, also keeping her voice low.
"John, this is hardly the time."
"What?"
He shrugged innocently.
"I'm just making sure I get full credit. You know, since I'm not dark and brooding, and I don't have a whole castle of my own. Several castles, in fact, now that I come to think of it."
He looked despondently around the room, his face so comical I almost laughed despite everything. Lily rolled her eyes.
"Because you're so insecure."
He reached over and dragged her from her chair, dumping her in his lap.
"I can be very insecure. That's why I need you to constantly tell me how important I am, and how much you love me."
She wrinkled her nose, and he dropped a kiss on it.
"No. Too much?"
She laughed and nestled against his chest. I shook my head and glanced at Dominic. His horrified expression made me chuckle.
"Don't worry, you'll get used to them," I assured him.
When his expression didn't change, I laughed again. Several hours later, when we finally managed to steal an hour alone in the palace rose garden, I refrained from pointing out that we were sitting in a similar manner to John and Lily at breakfast. I didn't want to say anything that might make him rethink having me snuggled on his lap. Not when we were having such an enjoyable time finding out exactly what the other had been thinking at crucial moments throughout our relationship.
"I was a fool," said Dominic,
when I asked why he had called the tawny and then proceeded to treat me so rudely.
"More than a fool. I hoped that an engagement through the tawny would be enough, but clearly it was not. So I ordered for you to come to my castle, thinking perhaps we just needed to be in the same vicinity. But clearly that didn't work either."
He sighed.
"So then I decided I needed to get you to actually marry me. Each night I asked you, desperate to get you to agree, but not really believing it possible that you could see past my appearance. I had been intrigued by you from the start, but you were terrified of me. In my despair, I made no effort to make myself lovable. I let my anger rule me at each instance of hurt pride."
I shook my head at him. What if I had said yes? If I had married you out of obligation because of the tawny, you would never have had the opportunity to be free.
"Thank goodness I was so repulsive then," he said wryly.
"You weren't all bad. You came to save me from the wolves, remember?"
"I've told you already that you reminded me of the goodness I had seen before in my mother and sister. I never stood up to my father for them, and I failed Adelaide in the end. But I had a chance to save you. It was an act of atonement, I suppose. Only then you came to my sick room and ordered around my servants and read to me, even though you turned up your pretty little nose at my mathematics."
He chuckled, the sound close to a growl, and placed a kiss on the offending article.
"I saw the way you controlled your fear and your anger toward me, and I began to learn that I could do the same. You made me choose to be different."
"That's funny," I said. "I don't remember being so controlled. I remember getting rather angry at you, in fact." He smiled ruefully.
"Only when I deserved and needed it."
"Oh, no disputing that." He shook his head at me before resting his forehead against mine.
"I love you, Sophie. You have saved me from myself."
I smiled, feeling as if my heart would burst. "When I rode into Palinar all those months ago, I told Lily that I wouldn't be coming back until I could free the kingdom and bring the light back with me. It never occurred to me that I might want to stay." His arms around me tightened.
"We would lose half our light without you as queen."
I flushed, but then my thoughts turned dark. Lily and I are both convinced Cole must have gotten his hands on an ancient godmother object. I only wish we had found it on him, and that we had found that man he was speaking with. Somehow, in all the confusion, the man Cole had been speaking to when the guards dragged me into the throne room dressed like Lily had disappeared. I was convinced he must have taken the object with him. Dominic cupped my face in his hands.
"I thought Lily was supposed to be the warrior." "Let it go, my love. You have freed an entire kingdom, as well as my heart. Let that be enough for one day."
A chill ran up me at his endearment, and I pressed my lips against his. Within moments I had forgotten every other thought, except wonder that I was sitting here surrounded by roses, kissing my beast. This concludes A Tale of Beauty and Beast by Melanie Sellier, narrated by Esther Wayne. Copyright 2017 by Melanie Sellier. This unabridged audiobook is published by arrangement with Melanie Sellier and was produced in the year 2018 by Tantor Media Incorporated, a division of Recorded Books, which holds the copyright thereto. Please visit tantor.com For more information on our growing library of unabridged